Welcome to Technori Live. We're back in studio at WGN talking with some of Chicago's top entrepreneurs, founders, and innovators. For those of you tuning in for the first time, shame on you. What is Technori? Well, put simply, Technori is where startups go to showcase. Since 2010, nearly 300 startups have been featured by us. And to date, they've gone on to raise more than $260 million in funding. I'm sure we had nothing to do with that. But really, it had a lot to do with these amazing entrepreneurs in Chicago. I am Scott Catoon. This is Technori Live. Joining me is GMM Nonstick Coding CEO and early stage investor Raveen Gandhi. Welcome back to the show. Last time you were here, it was a different titled show. You're still CEO of your company, but there's some new changes. There's some M&A lawyers wandering around your business.
Yes, it was very exciting news. On November 18th, we signed a deal to sell 100% of our company to SDK, which is a $7 billion Japanese conglomerate. And so it's a pretty amazing outcome. And it was nothing we were looking for. It just kind of, there's a whole story behind it, but ultimately it was a phenomenal outcome, and I could not be more excited for what's going to, you know, the next 1 or 2 years.
I'm excited to learn a lot more about this, obviously, you know, whatever you can share. There's a couple parts to this, I think, that are really cool right off the bat for an audience, particularly this tech audience. One is, and also to our guy, Bennett Wakenight here, who handles social media, I found out, obviously you were the one who posted this, but I found out about this via social media. This was one of those kind of connections where I was like, we are always waiting for newspapers, or in the past, we always waited for newspapers to tell us a story, or a reporter would leak like, hey, we're doing this thing. We are now in a world where the founder or the CEO of this company can write like, hey, I'm excited to tell my friends and family about this thing we're doing. And I got to see that on Facebook and immediately was like, congratulations, you got to come on my show and tell me more about it. So this is really cool to me, just an example of where the media is going. And then obviously congratulations to you and your company.
Yeah, thanks. In fact, you know, you bring up the media and the, you know, this power that's growing. When SDK, you know, they basically approached us out of the blue, and they had a tremendous amount of research on our business, on our industry, on our competition, and it was very impressive. And one of the things that they had done was really scrub our social media presence, because we have been, for the last couple of years, doing more media
stuff.
You're
everywhere.
Yeah, well, hey.
You are here. You are in the morning show at WGN. You are CNN. You are on Power Lunch. You are, basically, every time I see Tom Gimbel, I see you walk, like, somewhere, like, behind that. Like, that's camera A, camera B.
Well.
You're A.
It's definitely been a new experience for me doing more media stuff. But my potential buyer, what was amazing to me was how well the media stuff ends up telling the story about our business and how much actually my clients, you know, we supply to a whole host of multi-billion dollar American corporations. What's been really surprising to me is how well the media has played in regards to all of this stuff. It's really a win-win, and there's very little little downside that I've seen thus far.
What I think is cool on this particular front, not just social media and also your business, and for those that obviously didn't listen to the first track, we're going to do a little quick sit rep on like what GMM is, but it is not like the sexiest business on the planet, right? And the fact of the matter is that you're, because of how you run it, and because of the big brands and just the operation, the impact that it has, I think what's unique about your scenario is that the media traditionally doesn't cover, I think, companies and stories that are not relative to consumers and like in an obvious sense. But your company is very different in the way that you've handled getting it out there to make people understand, like, without this, there's, I don't know, you'll know more, but there's literally billions of dollars worth of brands that you would never use because of our product is like the key.
Right. The core differentiator that you're talking about is our strategy to say that when it comes to nonstick coatings, we believe the best brand name is your own, meaning
yes,
our clients. And before GMM, what was happening was a lot of people who made coatings would try to push their brand down the throat of a multi-billion dollar existing client.
Yeah.
And we said, guys, this doesn't make any sense. So what we were able to do was get pretty much the best cookware brands in America to use GMM technology, but make it invisible, to make it be behind the scenes. But what we would do in parallel is my marketing team would work with that client to create what we call consumer-based claims. Claims saying, if you use our technology, here's how you market it. It's X percent better, or lasts X percent longer, or cooks Y percent better. And, you know, like we were talking before the show about the attention span, how small it is. You might have 3 inches by 3 inches on a box at a Walmart aisle to get someone's attention. So you have to craft a story that's that succinct. So that's something that GMM excelled at. And for that reason today, over 40 million Americans every single day use our product. So it was something that was definitely not random, but getting the first client to bite in on that is always the hardest.
I can't figure out for the life of me why I had you on Industry Innovators. It's just such a you know, old thinking guy, you know, so stale your business practices they are.
What I found is the other thing that I've been doing recently that we were emailing about earlier is with the media, I've been writing some articles, and I've been writing, you know, producers will say, can you write about sales or marketing? And sometimes on a flight, and I'll put my thoughts down. And it's been really a good experience as I've put a lot of things in writing to realize how timeless business principles are. So you're talking about innovation.
Yeah.
So in this case, it's a boring, you know, quote unquote, unsexy industry. But business is hard no matter what industry you're in. There's killer competition everywhere you go. And if you can win in one industry, what I've found when I go back and read some of the articles I've written, I thought, you know, I'm going to send these to some of the tech entrepreneurs that I'm a seed stage investor in, because you can take the industry out. It's all about, you know, sales and marketing and durable competitive advantage and speed and hiring people. So those kind of principles, I think, without a doubt, are timeless. And when I find entrepreneurs who think that business principles are suspended in their industry for some magical reason, I know that business is probably not going to go anywhere.
Well, we're actually going to talk about some of those pieces you're speaking of in a minute here, but it's kind of funny that you bring this up. Personally, obviously, Technori is what I do now, CEO of Technori, and hosting this show and a few other things. But I used to write a lot. I used to write a lot of blogs. I used to write a lot of commentary when I was working in the commercial real estate industry. I used to write a lot of commentary in innovation space, what companies should be looking for to try to stay ahead of the curve, how to get their business employees and teams and people to sort of like buy in and understand that, you know, you're all part of the mix. It's just, you know, you might be one minute thing in your mind, but in my mind, it's a huge component to like how we operate. So we're about to pick back up Technori Bytes, where we write these sort of blog pieces, these guides on how-tos and things like that. I would love to actually have you as a contributor to write to that. One, I didn't actually intend on asking you that, but I'm going to do it since you're sitting here. But two, I went back and looked at some of my old writing to try to find the voice again, because it had been a while.
Yeah.
And I started practicing last week or two, writing little opening paragraphs and pieces, and came to the realization that I had lost touch with how amazing a practice it is to write what goes through your head all the time, so you can reflect on, I didn't realize how, and not to make it simple, but how simple this decision should have been for me.
Absolutely. There's a saying that I always think about. I don't know who said it, but it was, I don't know what I think until I write it.
Ravine Gandhi just said it.
Yes, absolutely. And Bartlett's, you know, bring him in. And, you know, we've got hundreds of employees within my company. So a lot of times, you know, a number of times in a given year, I'll send a all company kind of update if something big happens. Yep. Obviously, we just sold the business, so that was an entirely different story. But the point is that it's amazing how cluttered the human mind is. And it's amazing how much of what comes out of our mouth is kind of nonsensical in a way if you actually look at it and write it.
Ask these guys sitting in the room right now. I mean, you're running the top of things. It's all nonsense.
Yeah, and the great thing about writing is that every word is valuable. And when you have an editor, it's amazing. It's such a humbling process when you get red lines back saying useless, 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 superfluous, redundant, redundant. And I think, wow, I cut what was a 30-line thing down to 4 lines, and the message comes across with greater impact.
If only we could do that in a meeting. You know what I mean? If I could just stop the gibberish for a moment.
I think at a certain level, I mean, I'm not that cynical. I think that at a certain level, I've found that is possible. For instance, when you get the right partner, for instance, the business SDK that just bought us, at a certain point, once we really understood each other, our meetings were highly productive because I'd be flying 14 hours to Tokyo, or they'd be flying here to Chicago, and we might only have 3 hours based on everyone's schedule. And you have to be able to cut through the chafe and say, here are the 7 things we have to get through today, because there is an army of lawyers waiting to, you know, mark up the docs or something. So I feel like you have to, as a CEO or as a leader, you have to learn how to be succinct.
But I'm still struggling, but I'll get there. I'll get there. You did mention in this sort of, which was one of the questions I had listed here, is sometimes these acquisitions and things are a long time coming. It's an obvious thing. And other times it's just an opportunity. And it seems to me, obviously, in this case, that it was an opportunity. It was something that was not perhaps long thought out, like we're trying to, this was an end game for us. This is something that came up.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm 43 years old today. I started this company when I was 35. I had absolutely no plans to sell it whatsoever.
Well, when you sat down here with me 11 months ago, I asked you, and you're like, GMM for life, man.
Right,
and then I'm going to be a politician or something like that. Speaking of which, you want to go? Do you want to do that again? Do you want to go to politics after what we just went through?
Well, I'm pretty much on the record during this election, and things didn't go necessarily the way that I thought that they were going to go. But that's for another another time.
Absolutely.
As an American, I'm rooting for our president, and I'm all behind it. So
we'll leave it at that.
Yes, we'll leave it at that. I think that to your point about opportunism. When SDK came to us, initially it was a bolt from the blue for us, and it took me a number of months to warm up to the idea. But I think one of the great things about having gone started in selling businesses in the past is I knew what landmines to try to avoid. So very quickly, I was able to tell their corporate strategy and buy-side team, here's a list of sort of 10 things that we would require if we're even willing to contemplate this acquisition. And it's maybe like when you find the right person you're going to marry. Very quickly, things just become yes, 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 yes. They see eye to eye with us. I met very senior people at SDK, from the CEO of the entire, 11,000-person company on down to the deal team. And it was one of those things where eventually my senior team at GMM said, if you don't take this deal, you guys are crazy. And which leads me to another big point that I did, which was unique in this deal. My partner and I didn't keep this whole thing confidential. A lot of times when you're selling your company, it's secret, 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 and one day you unveil it to everybody. In this case, we brought in 8 or 10 very key people and said, look, here's what's going on in all candor. What do you think? And the reason I did that is I learned how important it is to have your team be bought into what's going to be the next few years for us. And it was amazing to me where, VP of sales, VP of operations, VP of finance, head of one of our factories said, this is great, not only for you guys, but for us, for our careers, and for what the future might hold. So it's just really rare. Right now, I'm very, very, very happy. And it's a great feeling to have, when you feel like the thing that you built and created is moving not out of your control, but just into a different phase where it's going to have so much more power and impact.
Yeah. So, we'll take this and sort of lead it into some of the stuff you've been writing about. And I kind of want to put this into context. You look at, obviously very different, but Vine and Twitter, or recently, Nest and Dropcam, and then obviously Alphabet owning them, and how not being open with the team and on both sides, let's use Nest and Dropcam as a simple one. Tony Fadell, kind of known as a little bit of a Steve Jobsian type person, who did not tell his team what he expected and what he wanted, certainly didn't tell Dropcam what they expected and wanted. Alphabet has their own set of rules. It's not running around like Google, where they used to just throw money around. So now when you bring in the sort of the merger or the acquisition, you're still going to operate under your own brand, is everyone's just bolting. Everyone's running. The company that was just bought is worthless. And if you're Vine, it gets shut down because people are like, well, we're not getting what we signed up for. This isn't what we were told in our meeting. The fact of the matter that you had these guys come in early and said, listen, how can we do this the right way, if at all, if we should even do this, has it so that these guys don't have that what the hell moment.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I cherish is continuing to learn. As a CEO, you're learning every day. So what I described is a very old school practice, probably in old line metal bending type industries. Everything's done in secrecy, and one day, the word comes down from on high that we're going to do X or Y. And it can be very, very disruptive to, and in some cases, it can chase people away, what you're saying. Where I learned is, we discussed last time I was on that I do a lot of VC and angel investing. Yep. And one of the companies that has been just an amazing outcome is called Kimi, that we talked about last time. So I'm in these board meetings where you have the CEO, Greg Marsh, who's barely 30, early 30s, and is, we have 60 employees
those
now.
Those young guys.
Yeah, these young guys. But, we've raised, it'll be announced, probably at this right around $70 million. So it's been a great outcome. But I sit there in these meetings amazed at these 20-somethings and these early 30-somethings that are making such mature decisions with tens and hopefully soon even hundreds of millions of dollars, and how they deal with their teams. And even though I'm significantly older, but I'm still running a company, I can learn from stuff like that, because you can take a little bit of that open tech culture into the chemical industry like mine. And what I found is that it's all about the people. It's all about the people. Ben Horowitz wrote this great book, The Hard Things About Hard Things. Yep. And that's one of these principles. People think that they get the strategy right, or they get the competitive advantage right, and if we get our pricing right, all of that is vapor if the people aren't right. And what I find with when you do something as big as selling your company, your people have to hit that ground running the day after the acquisition happier than they've ever been. So this was something that was a great, I hope, knock on wood, a great decision that we've made, and so far it looks good.
I have no doubt that it's going to work out. I think what makes you so talented in this particular category as a leader is what you just mentioned, the dabbling in tech, and not dabbling. You're quite an investor in tech. It's much past dabbling. But it keeps you nimble and keeps you mobile in just the way that you think of things. So when you bring that to a company that maybe is more traditional in style or what it does, that enables you to lead teams in a faster way, and I think ultimately paid off here. So we only have a minute or two left here, but I did want to hit on, you know, one of the things you sent me was sort of the 9 key rules of a CEO to live by. And I think that you've probably gone through a handful of them just as an experience of what you talked about today. But what are a couple of those rules that you think should be guiding principles for maybe one for someone who's just starting a company, one for someone who's sort of leading that first round, and one for someone who's about to hit the gas pedal?
So for early stage people, I think my first rule was never confuse activity and progress.
Yep.
And that's something that people, you know, they love to come in and say, I'm so busy. I'm doing this, and this. And their soliloquy is designed to convince you that there's a lot of stuff getting done.
Yeah.
And I think that being able to differentiate as a leader between, okay, I know that you ran around a lot, but what was the result?
Yeah.
That's something that early stage people really need to focus on, because just getting X number of people to look at your deck, or getting this great board of advisors, or getting, you know, your font really well done on your business card or something, it that necessarily
isn't... My card looks nice, though.
Right. Oh, hey,
it does
your
look
card
good.
Is...
It's one of the best.
It's probably going to be acquired at some point, you know?
It better be.
Right. So that's something for the early stage. I would say for people who are leading an existing business, I would say that... know the numbers is one of my other big ones, because a lot of times, again, you're running a business, you're busy, you're overwhelmed, because every day you have to make decisions.
Check that QuickBooks app.
But ultimately, what are we here to do? We're here to build value, and that's measured, for better or for worse, with economics, with dollars. You know, I'm a pretty diehard capitalist, and I tell people, know the numbers, know every single KPI, wake that CEO up in the middle of the night, and he should be able to spit out every key, you know, operating metric. I would say the last one for someone who's late stage or has gone through an acquisition is maybe my last rule on the article, which is anything is possible. And, you know, it's a little bit of a soft point, but the truth of the matter is, like I said earlier in this interview, I'm really happy right now. I really feel good when you see something that you've built and created grow and take on a life of its own, and it kind of goes beyond you. It's either a legacy thing, or it's an acknowledgement that no matter what crazy idea you have in your head to start something, to invest in something, anyone who's a naysayer, they don't know any better than you what's going to work and what's not. So if you have that passion, understand that anything really is possible, and fight that negativity, because it's really easy to get depressed.
Very cool. Ravine, you're welcome back anytime. I don't have to, you know, obviously we like to get Heather in. We went to college together, so anytime I can talk to Heather, it's great. But anytime you have something you want to talk about, or talk about some of these startups or whatever, you are welcome here anytime.
I appreciate that.
Thank you so much. Watch this episode and more on technori.com. Follow me at Katoon. And to keep up with future showcases, Technori stories, and The Feed with Sean, follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Technori. Boom, that's a long wrap.